I was yelling now, wordlessly, an endless stream of sound. And then something on the stairs, something hollow-sounding, a knocking, almost, and I wasn't sure if I was seeing right when Hadrian Moriarty came around the corner. He didn't say anything. He just grunted and did something with his arms. And then Alistair Holmes was laid out cold on the floor. Hadrian bent and picked up the lighter, then pocketed it. "Hi," I said dumbly. He jerked his head, a greeting. "I thought you'd run." "I did," he said. "Behind the hedges by the house. It's best to stay close for as long as you can, before you make a break for it." "Oh," I didn't know what else to say. "I smelled the petrol," he said, by way of explanation. "Here," and he pulled a bowie knife from his pocket, flicked it open. I wrenched myself away from him, panting. "From the spit to the fire," he rolled his eyes. "No, kid, stop." And he got to work, sawing the rope off. "Next time this happens to you, you shimmy, like you're dancing, okay? You didn't even tie your hands."
"Next time, okay."
"Yeah," he tossed the ropes to the concrete floor. "Get up," he said, "and get lost." On the ground, Alistair Holmes was already beginning to stir. I rubbed my arms, trying to coax feeling back into them.
"Why did you help me?"
Hadrian looked down at Alistair.
"He deserves to rot in a cell. He doesn't get to pick his ending. He doesn't get to burn down the house I'm hiding in either, even if it is his own."
With that, he spat on the ground. "As for you," I waited for him to say it, "you're just a dumb kid. You've been conned, used. You're in over your head. Go home to your mother." The things that have been scrolling through my head since we landed back in the UK.
"You're not done yet," he said, and tossed me the knife. "Now get out of here."
The detective said later she found me wandering outside, dazed and covered in gasoline, holding a blade in my hands. I told her someone had done it to me, that I didn't know who. I don't know why I lied. Maybe I couldn't face the idea of more of this day, this week, unending, stretching out into court dates and arguments, more battles in this war. Maybe that was what you did, bent the truth open until it made a big enough hole for you to escape. They asked me to describe him, the man who'd tied me up. I said I couldn't. I said it wasn't a big deal. I still don't know why they believed me. Maybe they thought I'd done it to myself. They kept me at the hospital overnight for shock. Alistair's diagnosis had been correct. I stayed another half day there, my mother sleeping in the hard plastic chair by my bed, and then, after another round of interrogations, my father arrived, and they released me to London into my parents' care. What haunted me most wasn't the ropes, or the chair, or the gasoline, though those played recurring parts in my nightmares. It wasn't Alistair or Hadrian's crisis of conscience. It was that we'd had the time, Holmes and I. 3 long minutes before the police made it to us, enough for her to turn to me and say, "This is what you have to do and why you have to do it." No, what haunted me most was that I knew, had I confessed to August's murder there on the lawn, Holmes would have found a way to clear my name. But she was letting her brother walk free for his mistake. She'd given up Bryony Downs to God knows what fate. She'd played judge and jury for Hadrian and Philippa, and now she was letting herself be led away for a crime she didn't commit, and she would walk away from it unscathed, and there would be no one doing time for August's death. It wasn't hers to decide. It wasn't mine either. Charlotte Holmes had told me once that she wasn't a good person. That day, I'd begun to believe it.
20. Charlotte. "Will you be there? At the party tonight?" I took a breath and sent it. A minute. Then, "Yeah." Watson, I thought. Something was buzzing in my head. He was there. He was talking to me. Even now, he was typing. "He's watching me. I have to go." I asked 4 times for a follow-up. Received none. I hesitated, then switched the phone back off. Watson, I thought, and Lucien Moriarty. and I turned the volume down on what I was feeling until I couldn't hear it anymore.
"Put your shoes on," Leander was saying. "I hope you two are all set to kiss and make up."
"Uncle, where did I put my jacket? Uncle, I think Lucien's at the party."
"Cold feet?"
I tried very hard not to stamp my foot like a child. "I'm serious." He sighed and got back up to finish stuffing his bag with dry goods.
"That really is the lowest excuse I think I've heard you use," he said. "I don't have time for this."
"Leander, look at me." Grudgingly, he did. Watson said he was being watched by someone, a male someone, and then he stopped responding. On the off chance that I'm right, that is what Jamie is saying, what do we do? My uncle set the duffel bag aside and hoisted up the shotgun he'd left sitting on the counter.
"I don't know," he said. "Any ideas?"
21. Jamie. I couldn't get my father alone. We were at a fancy restaurant in Soho in New York City that my mother had researched and booked the week before. All of us were there. My father, my mum, Lucien Moriarty, the whole happy gang. Abigail drove out with us too. She'd been upstairs when we'd arrived home setting up the guest bedroom, though she'd left Malcolm and Robbie with their grandmother. It was for the best. I didn't know what would happen tonight, but two small children had no business being in the middle of it. Lucien, Ted, kept calling the waiter over for more wine, more cocktails, more lobster, more filet mignon. He did it in a way that was unobtrusive, conspiratorial. The food arrived at his elbow like it would at a king's, and he would smile at the rest of us a bit sheepishly and say, "Do you want to try this? I hear it's very good." They'd put us at a round table in a small private room so we could hear each other better, but Lucien was dominating the conversation. He told my father he liked his coat, then wrote down the name of the shop where he'd bought it. He asked Abigail endless questions about Malcolm and Robbie. Did they like their school, their teachers? What scamps, what sort of trouble did they get up to? Then he pulled my mother in and asked if I had been like them as a child, and I watched as, for the first time, my mother and Abigail had a conversation that wasn't stilted and awful and loaded with resentment. "Jamie had taken that long to toilet train, too," my mother was saying, and Lucien held my mother's hand, running his thumb over the silver wedding band on her finger. He was terrifying. He was so much more terrifying than if he had been obviously cruel. That would have been confirmation. I would have had certainty, would have felt justified in doing what I needed to do. And now all I could think was, I'm going crazy. I'd been staging an investigation into the wrongdoings against me like I was Batman or something. But I'd been having panic attacks. I'd been lashing out at Elizabeth. I'd been hiding things from my friends. I'd been accusing people of conspiring against me, as though I were so important that people would go out of their way to mess my life up. As though they enacted some grand scheme against me, and the pièce de résistance was spraying a can of soda onto my laptop. But what if I had done it to myself? What if I deleted my physics presentation by accident? What if I'd never written it in the first place? I was sleep-deprived, on high alert. I was throwing up whenever I even thought about last year. And maybe I was doing all this to myself. I was manufacturing situations to match the panic in my head. What if I was hallucinating, blacking out? What if my sister was just a girl at a perfectly fine new school who hated it, who wanted her brother to take her home? I was paranoid. I had been, ever since I met Charlotte Holmes, but why on earth would Lucien Moriarty take the time to woo and marry my mother? As though I needed so badly to treat my mother's remarriage as a personal affront to me that I decided her new husband was the boogeyman. It wasn't far-fetched. I'd treated my father's remarriage that way. Oh, God, what if my mom had just found a really nice guy who wanted to make her happy? I spent the whole dinner staring at him. I couldn't even be subtle about it. When we'd first sat down, I'd been texting Holmes under the table when Lucien, Ted, had put a hand on my shoulder.
"This is a bit embarrassing," he was saying, "and I don't want to boss you around, but do you mind if you put your phone in the middle of the table?" Confirmation. Confirmation that I wasn't losing my mind. He knew I was reaching out for help. He wanted to get my lifeline out of my hands. Desperately, I looked up at my father. He was switching his phone to silent. Abigail was too.
"It's a game we've been playing on nice occasions," my mother said. "Out with our friends. It helps us stay present. Everyone puts their phone in a stack in the center of the table, and the first person who caves to check theirs has to buy dinner."
She and Lucian shared a conspiratorial look.
"Not that I'll make any of you pick up this tab," he said, "but I've been so eager to get to know you all."
I watched as he placed my phone at the top of the stack.
"There," my mother said. "Isn't that better?"
I sat next to him at dinner, this man who had orchestrated murders, told lies for politicians, blackmailed, cheated, infected me with a deadly virus, and then dangled the antidote out of my reach. I refilled his wine glass. I listened to him tell my parents at length about how he'd gone to a wilderness school just like Shelby's.
"I'd always loved horses," he said. "I was so happy when I found out we had that in common."
My mother squeezed his hand.
"Shell loved her new school when we first arrived, you know. We'd signed the paperwork and everything. Such a beautiful campus. Impressive buildings. They even had a full medical facility, I imagine in case there's any riding accidents."
"And then the poor girl calls when we are hours away and begs us to come back and get her."
"Homesickness," my father said, shaking his head.
"It's very real."
"She'll adjust soon enough," my mother said.
I was clenching my jaw so hard I was sure it had gone white. As the waiters brought out shrimp and steak, my mother told stories about how the two of them had met. They'd bumped into each other in front of a grocery store. He'd helped her pick up her fruit and veg, just like a film, and about their whirlwind courtship.
"Ted is always traveling for work," she said, "and I found every time he went away, I missed him more."
He caught up my mother's hand and kissed her palm. My own hands seized under the table.
"My first wife died," he said quietly,
more to my mother than anyone else.
"It was slow, and it was painful, and I spent a lot of time by her bedside thinking. I didn't want to waste any more time. And when I met Gracie, I decided that life was too short, that I needed to take a risk."
My mother held their clasped hands to her lips.
"From everything you've said, Betty was one hell of a woman."
Across the table, Abigail's eyes had filled with tears. My father was diligently cutting up his steak, nodding to himself as though Ted was some kind of minor prophet. That was what got me, what I couldn't figure out. How much did my dad know? How much had he figured out? Did he look so studiously polite because he was celebrating his ex-wife's marriage to someone new, or because he knew he was sitting across from Lucian Moriarty and was biding his time before he acted? I tried desperately to catch his eyes across the table, but my father kept staring at his plate, sawing away at his food. And my mother was so happy, her hair done up in curls, her nails painted, a modest ring on her finger. Wouldn't Lucian Moriarty have gone the whole nine yards, stuck a giant rock there just for show? But no, there was just the dainty band on her finger, and Ted's gaze kept returning there, then flickering back up to her face, and I'd be damned if there wasn't actually affection in his eyes. I was officially losing my goddamn mind.
"Does anyone need anything?" my mother asked, smiling.
Everyone shook their heads.
"I think we've had everything on the menu," Abigail laughed. "It was so wonderful. Thank you."
"Do you think it's time for the cake, then?"
Lucian asked, as the waiter appeared in the door to our private room. He made a hand signal, and the man nodded.
"Ted!"
It was the first time my father had spoken in a good half hour. He had on his bluffest tone, the one he reserved for toddlers and criminals and his in-laws. It was clear that even if he didn't know who Ted really was, he didn't like him much. Thank God for that, I thought. Not everyone's falling for him.
"How about you and I sidle over to that excellent-looking bar and I buy you a drink?" "Oh," Ted said, "I'd love to, but I don't want to leave Gracie."
No, my mother said and beamed at her ex-husband. Go. I want you and James to get to know each other.
And there it was. Lucian paused. It was natural to need a moment before a one-on-one with your wife's ex-husband, but this wasn't that. Holmes had taught me a lot of things, and I'd mastered very few of them, but I was getting better at reading people. He didn't look hesitant. He didn't look scared. He looked, for less than a half second, furiously angry. Watching Lucian's reaction, I had the uncanny feeling that I was watching Holmes at work. The clockwork gears spinning along so quickly, the whole thing looked natural, but he must not have seen a way out of it without displeasing his new wife, and without her largesse, he was powerless here. Well, as powerless as Lucian Moriarty could be.
Of course, Lucian said, pushing back his chair. Of course, James.
I'm just going to call and see how my boys are doing, Abigail said. She took her phone from the pile in the center of the table. From the look she shot me as she walked away, I could tell that she thought my mum and I needed a moment alone. With her fork, my mother chased her lobster tail around her plate.
You've been very quiet, she said.
I know, I told her. It's all been a bit of a shock. She looked at me.
I'm happy, you know, and I'm allowed to be happy.
I knew what she wanted from me. The words I should have said. I should have hugged her, should have asked her to tell more stories about her and Ted. What was the courthouse like? Was it really romantic? How did he propose? I couldn't make myself do it. Good, I said instead, like an asshole, and we sat there like two strangers, sipping our water. Who knew how long my father and Lucian would be? I'd find a way to sneak away. I'd take my phone with me. Abigail had taken hers, and so what if my mother was mad at me for it? It was nothing compared to the alternative. Maybe I was stark raving mad, but I had to know for sure. The waitstaff began tidying around us, making room for the cake. I helped them make a stack of dirty plates to take away, more to avoid my mother's sad eyes than anything else. Lucian had dropped his napkin on the floor when he'd gotten up, and I pulled back his chair to replace it. There, on his seat, my phone. How had it gotten there, on his seat? I hadn't seen him take it. I hadn't seen him look at it. How much did he know? I had it in my hand and up my sleeve before my mother could see it. You know, I should use the restroom, too. It's a long trip back home. My mum wasn't looking at me.
Do you want any dessert? She asked quietly.
No, I said, standing up. Thanks, though. Inside, I locked myself in the restroom stall and hurriedly turned my phone on. I couldn't tell if he'd gone through my texts, my emails, if he'd slipped something in there to track my messages and calls. I tried to remember what Holmes had told me. A tiny earpiece? I peered into the receiver, but saw nothing. And my phone was pinging over and over with messages. A long text from Elizabeth.
Lexington has been selling to Anna since he got here, but he didn't front her the $1,000. She was flashing it to him, too. He said she said something about some kind of daddy. Sugar daddy, is that what it's called? Disgusting. I got all of this out of him by telling him I would do his English homework for the rest of the semester. I'm not writing a word.
Then, Lena says that she thinks she has a lead on where the money ended up. I'm meeting with her in a minute. I'll report back. Then,
the money's real. The crime is real. Lena says that Anna is doubling down on her story. She's scared of something. She must need the money back.
Then,
Jamie, are you there? Can we meet tonight after bed check?
Then, 20 minutes ago, 4 words from Holmes.
We're on our way.
Her and Leander, I imagined. So that had been his errand in the city today. I wasn't surprised. I'll meet you on campus at midnight, I wrote Elizabeth. Inside the Carter Hall tunnel entrance. And to Holmes, I wrote, where are you? The door opened. Someone came in and started washing their hands.
I'm here,
Holmes wrote, and I stood and deleted all of the messages I had, row by row, person by person, painstakingly. And when I opened the stall door, Lucian Moriarty grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me through it.
22. Charlotte. We didn't take the shotgun. We took two pistols instead. I had mine in my purse. It was the only thing that would fit in there, other than a lipstick. I didn't bring a lipstick. I brought my lockpick kit, belted to my upper thigh, and I put in my hair clips that could be used as a Phillips head screwdriver if I needed one, and I thought for a moment about bringing a duffel bag along with us so I could in fact bring the shotgun. It was sawed off expertly. It was a thing of beauty, but that seemed like it would perhaps draw attention. It was clear that Leander thought I was taking a ridiculous series of precautions. I hoped very much that he was right. The restaurant was crowded when we walked in. I imagined it was always crowded. It was the sort of place where no one wore their wealth ostentatiously, but wore it all the same. Cashmere, driving gloves on the table, that sort of thing. Leander pointed the way to a series of small private rooms off past the bar where James Watson was drinking, alone.
"You go on," he said. "I'll say goodbye to James, and you can go talk to Jamie, and we can leave. 10 minutes, yes? There's a flight leaving LaGuardia at 11. I mean to be on it."
I watched him as he walked toward James. It was voyeuristic to do so, but I thought I might learn something, maybe about myself. He approached silently. That wasn't hard to do in a restaurant this crowded, I deducted points, and sat down beside James all at once, as though he'd stepped through an imaginary door. It was the sort of thing that would usually get me a delighted smile, I thought. The show of effort, the neatness of it. James Watson looked up at Leander, and then he put a hand over his eyes. Was he weeping? The trick wasn't that good. Oh, I thought, I should not be watching this. But I didn't go to the table either. It was a fit of vanity more than anything else that led me to the restroom instead. I told myself I wanted to make sure my lock-picking kit wasn't showing beneath my dress. Wasn't it interesting, the interplay between our verbal thoughts and the currents that ran beneath them? In actual fact, I wanted to assure myself that I looked pretty before I saw Jamie Watson for the last time, and I knew that was why I was going. "Goodbyes are difficult. Let me have this one thing. Qui multum abet, plus cupit, etc." I looked passable for someone who suspected that the man trying to kill her was in the same restaurant. Fine. I bent to wash my hands. Noise from the other side of the bathroom wall, like someone beating a wet sack with their fists. More accurately, like someone was trying to kill someone else in the men's. Watson. I didn't stop to think about it, to consider the decision. It only took a moment to take the gun out of my evening bag.
23. Jamie. Lucien Moriarty had no intention of killing me. I knew, because he was telling me that verbatim. "But I want you to know," he said, throwing another punch into my stomach, "that I have no problem hurting you until you listen to me." He had his other arm against my throat, keeping me pinned to the wall. I'd fought against him at first, but I couldn't get any purchase, my feet sliding on the tiles as he cut off my air. All I'd managed to do was claw some of the buttons off his shirt when he'd first grabbed me out of the stall. "You'll do what I say," he said, and pushed that arm harder against my neck. "If you don't, I'll stop. I'll stop giving you orders, and I'll start giving them instead to the people who have your sister. Do you understand?" "What's your plan?" I croaked out. "Wouldn't you like to know? Nod. Nod if you understand." I couldn't manage to nod. I croaked out a yes and watched his awful, shiny face smirk. Ted. Ted, with his charming accent, with the eyes only for my mother. Ted, bashful, brilliantly happy. Ted, who had won everyone over. Ted, with his arm against my windpipe. I took a shuddering breath. Then I pushed back hard and surged forward, shoving him down onto the floor. He skidded backward until his head hit the concrete wall. I'd been playing a lot of rugby this last year. "I want you to know that I'm not going to kill you," I said, putting my knees down onto his chest. He was conscious, breathing, but there was blood spilling down his forehead into his eyes. "But I want you to know I don't have any problems hurting you until you listen to me." His breathing was coming hard. "You little shit," he gasped, and at that moment the bathroom door flew open. Charlotte Holmes was standing there in a red dress, pointing a pistol at Lucien Moriarty with both hands. The door snapped shut behind her.
"Oh," she said, "I didn't know you had this covered."
She put the safety on and slipped the pistol into her bag. There was a commotion in the main dining room, one lone voice yelling, "I saw her! I saw she had a gun!" Calmly, Holmes flipped the lock behind her. There were so many things I could have felt in that moment, but the only one I could muster was relief. I grinned at her.
"Hi," I said.
"Hi," she said.
"What are you going to do about that?"
She pointed her toe at Lucien Moriarty. He was struggling to get up, but he was still groggy enough that I could keep him pinned for another few minutes. I told her so.
"Do you have a plan?"
I asked, and then I blanched. The last time I let Holmes make the plan, she must have seen it.
"No," she said. "The gun was my plan. But it's not the plan anymore. There's a window, a small one, up there."
"So we climb out it? Then what?
Remember that he can hear us."
"Of course I can bloody well hear you."
I punched Lucien in the mouth.
"That's for my mother," I informed him. "Or for my sister. For both."
Holmes raised an eyebrow.
"That's going to leave a mark.
But the bleeding head wound, that's just going to disappear."
"I didn't say I wasn't okay with your decision."
"You should be," I said. "The head wound was for you."
There was someone hammering on the bathroom door.
"Come out! We've called the police! Come out!"
"Get my phone?" I asked her. "I think it's under the sink."
"Screen's cracked," she said, tossing it to me.
"I'll charge it to him." I scrolled through my contacts. "Here, hold on."
"Detective Shepard."
"Shepard," I said into the phone.
"I..."
Lucien shoved hard against me. 2 seconds later, Holmes had her gun trained on him again.
"Check him for weapons,"
I mouthed to her, and she started patting down his legs.
"Hi. Is everything okay?"
"Yes. Well, no,"
I said into the phone, as Holmes pulled the sheathed knife out of Lucien's sock.
"We're in the men's bathroom at Arnold's restaurant in New York City. Lucien Moriarty married my mother, and now I have him pinned to the floor, and Holmes is here with a gun, and someone's called the cops."
You what?"
Holmes darted in around me and yanked a gun out from inside his blazer. Then she pulled out his wallet and his mobile and his passport, 1, 2, 3, with the clean skill of a pickpocket. Her other hand was steady on the gun. The hammering on the door was getting harder.
"Police!"
"Like I said, listen, Shepard, I want you to know that we're going to have to leave him here."
"Police!"
"But I can give you the full story when I see you."
Holmes made an all-clear sign with her hands. I nodded.
"This isn't my jurisdiction," Shepard was saying.
"I sort of thought you should know anyway."
"Fine, then get down to the station."
"Later, we're kind of busy."
"Jesus, Jamie, get down there now!"
But I'd already hung up. Holmes was stuffing Lucien's things into her tiny bag.
"Police! We're opening this door!"
Someone throwing their shoulder against it, a splintering sound. The adrenaline was starting to make its way out of my system. The glow of it, the sudden clarity, the confidence, it was going. And when I got up off Lucien Moriarty, I had to wince when I kicked him to stay down. I was going to do jail time, I realized. It wasn't even a question anymore. Holmes nodded to the window. I clambered up onto the sink, then pulled her up next to me. And for a moment, she was flush against me, warm, her hair just under my nose. And I bent to make a cradle with my hands to hoist her up, the way I did when we first met, when I was helping her climb into Dobson's dorm room. We were better at it now. On the first push up, she had the window open. On the second, she was out and reaching a hand down to help me. The bathroom door cracked, like lightning striking a tree. Lucien Moriarty was stumbling to his feet. Outside, people were screaming. But I grabbed Charlotte Holmes's hand, and I scrabbled up the wall with my shoes, and she pulled me out onto the corner of Broadway and Prince. The second we got to our feet, we started to run.
24. Charlotte. We needed a bolt hole, somewhere we could hide. They would check the trains, they would check the taxis and the toll stations and the rental cars. They would check the airports now, too, and so I supposed if going to London tonight had still been on the docket, it wasn't any more. Possibilities. Return to the Green apartment. Fall on my sword in front of Hadrian Moriarty. Ask for sanctuary. Locate an empty Airbnb. Break in. Hide temporarily and call D.I. Green for assistance. Leander might be back at the Green apartment. We might lead the chase back to his door. I didn't dare contact him in case he was currently being questioned. The second option was suicidal, and the third, if we misjudged even slightly, would involve us waking up vacationers by breaking into their rental. That meant more police. The fourth had possibility. I dragged Watson into an alley, down behind a dumpster at the far end. A moment passed, and then a police car raced by. The next one got stuck behind a snarl of traffic. Its siren bayed on and on, like a hound. "I'm calling the yard," I whispered. Watson nodded. It was the middle of the night in London, but D.I. Green was awake. "Hi, Stevie," she said. "Yes, hi. I need a bolt hole in Lower Manhattan." "What did you do to Lisa's apartment?" "Nothing. We had a physical altercation with Lucien Moriarty in a public restroom in Soho." "We who?" "Watson and I."
"Yes, brilliant, well done."
"Help or don't," I hissed, "but spare me the smart remarks."
"I hear sirens," she grumbled, but I could hear her typing. "Fine, listen, I meant to speak to you anyway. We made contact today with a new source."
"Who?"
"Merrick Morgan Vilk. He's in your area. I'll call him to say that I'm sending you to him. Here, I have an address. Do you have a pen handy?"
Watson made a horrible strangled sound. A rat had made its way out of the dumpster and was now crawling across his shoes. "No," I said. "But I have a fairly good memory."
25. Jamie. I realized as we were ushered in the back entrance of the Morgan Vilk residence that my shirt was covered in Lucien Moriarty's blood, or maybe my own. It was hard to tell. Holmes, who was always so fastidiously clean, was filthy. Her red dress had gone brown and ragged at the bottom, and her legs below it were all over cuts and dirty-looking bruises. She and I stood together in the kitchen like a pair of murderous orphans in the thick of the Black Plague. The kitchen itself was unremarkable. Cabinets, table, a stainless steel sink. From what I could tell from the stairs leading upstairs, Morgan Vilk was renting the bottom two floors of a brownstone. The girl who let us in eyed us warily. "Mr. Morgan Vilk has just gone to get some documents." "Yes," Holmes said. "Fine. Who are you?"
"My colleague," said Milo Holmes, sitting at the kitchen table as his assistant exited quietly.
I jumped about a mile. I hadn't seen him there. From the way that Holmes's eyes widened, then narrowed, she hadn't seen him either, which was a first, as far as I could tell. Maybe it was because Milo looked nothing like himself. A tracksuit, a massive beard, no glasses, and his hair long, tied up in a knot on the top of his head. An empty glass in front of him and a bottle.
"No," Holmes said, edging back toward the door. "No, absolutely not."
And for a hysterical moment, I thought she was talking about his man bun.
"Sit,"
he said, and I was shocked to hear a slur on his words, as though he'd been drinking.
"Sit, or I'll drag you back into this house and tie you to that goddamn chair."
I'd always been afraid of Milo Holmes. It would be stupid not to be, but in that moment I was terrified. Holmes was impassive, but she sat down across from him slowly, as though he might lunge at her.
"D.I. Green sent me. I'm here for Merrick Morgan Vilk."
"You always assume I don't know these things," Milo said.
He splashed more whiskey into his glass.
"You never learn, do you?"
I swallowed. "Why are you here, Milo?"
"Jamie," he said with extravagant scorn. "I'm being so rude, forgive me. Perhaps you'd like a change of clothes, either of you?"
"No, thank you. Milo..."
"Stop looking at me like a pair of frightened rabbits."
He brought the glass to his lips.
"I wanted you here. I'm not going to hurt you."
Holmes watched his throat as he swallowed.
"Are you in touch with D.I. Green?"
"Detective Inspector Green was the one who reached out to me, girl."
that from a voice booming down the stairs.
"Hold on, hold on. Yes, hello."
Merrick Morgan Vilk was a bit out of breath. He had a document box balanced on his well-fed waistline, and he greeted us with a politician's smile. By habit, I jumped to my feet. Holmes extended her hand up from her chair.
"Merrick," Milo said, "Miss Holmes would like to know what's going on here."
The air quotes were almost visible. He dropped the document box down on the table.
"Our friend Milo here," Milo saluted, "has introduced me to his friends on the United Nations Security Council. I'm here working with an exploratory committee."
"I see," I said. I really didn't see.
"That's neither here nor there," Milo said. "I'm here because I don't think the Americans will extradite me back to Britain. Well, they might not. Perhaps they will. Who knows? It's a party, really."
Morgan Vilk's mouth tightened.
"We've had some new developments these past few days."
Milo took another sip.
"Security footage, of all things. Security footage from the camera on my property that I set up. Footage that I wiped so clean it was sparkling, and somehow it ended up on some idiot's desk at Scotland Yard, someone who didn't know the score.
Footage of you. Of you shooting..." I couldn't make my mouth say the words. "Say, August Moriarty." For a moment, Holmes put her head into her hands.
"And what? Now you're feeling all the guilt that you've been suppressing?"
"Guilt?"
Milo held his glass up to the light.
"Is this guilt? I just don't particularly want to go to prison."
Holmes looked like she was about to launch herself across the table at him, claws extended. I put a hand on her shoulder.
"Hey," I said to her.
She stiffened, then relaxed, then nodded. Milo watched this with some interest.
"Disgusting," he said, to no one, and drained the rest of his whiskey.
Morgan Vilk cleared his throat.
"Charlotte," he said, "we were talking about the UN.
"Right," she said, her eyes still on Milo.
"And your mistress, of course."
To his credit, or actually maybe against his credit, Morgan Vilk smiled.
"What? Wait, I'm sorry," I said. "I'm still sort of lost."
"Mr. Morgan Vilk, in the interest of time, would you mind terribly if I explain to Watson here your current situation and what we're all doing here?"
Merrick Morgan Vilk looked delighted. He would have liked my father.
"Yes, go on."
"Where should I start?"
Holmes asked, scanning him with her eyes.
"Well, not to put too fine a point on it, my mistress isn't my mistress anymore."
"No, of course not," she said. "Your mistress isn't your mistress anymore. She's your wife. That's easy, the wedding band. But she's not here with you. I've noticed you turning it round on your finger, perhaps because you'd forgotten to call her today, and now it's too late to reach her in Britain. What was your district when you were an MP? Is she back at the old family pile?" "No, that would upset your children. A flat, then, in London, because if anyone is avoiding the countryside and has your means, they're there. And, by the way, you're not running for office, so I'm not sure why you insist on calling whatever you're doing here an exploratory committee."
"Oh," he asked. "And how do you know that?"
"You're sleeping well, eating well, and you look like you're at peace."
Holmes paused, her eyes tracking into the distance, and then she continued.
"Any man who's running for office again after a sex scandal wouldn't be so comfortable. He also wouldn't be in America. It would be absurdly stupid to raise American money to run for British office. You're meeting with a member of the UN Security Council. You're done running for office. You're trying to drum up support for a nomination for an ambassadorship, which is not precisely legal, but not precisely illegal either, hence the cloak and dagger."
Mr. Morgan Vilk applauded. He had a wonderful, jolly smile.
"Oh, excellent," he said to Milo. "I like your sister. How fun."
Milo shook his head.
"She's missing all the important bits, like telling us what on earth she's doing here."
Holmes scowled.
"I phoned Scotland Yard in need of a safe house."
"Because you had just been beating Lucien Moriarty half to death,"
Mr. Morgan Vilk said with the same jolly smile he had on before. I inched away from him. Maybe I didn't want him to meet my father.
"How did you manage that?" he asked me.
"Brilliant work, really."
Rugby?" I should have played rugby, he said. Pity. Yes, anyway, Mr. Moriarty. I'm very interested in Mr. Moriarty.
Holmes frowned. I've looked at the records. You know, when I first spoke to your son...
When was that?
Monday, Holmes said. In his stairwell. She said it so smoothly it took me a second to realize.
You were there.
Later, she said, and gave me a look I couldn't quite interpret. When I first spoke with him, I got the impression that perhaps Lucian had quit your campaign to deal with the matter of his brother August losing his job as my tutor.
Losing his job? What a euphemism. Can't forget the trunkload of cocaine or you framing him, Milo said.
I'm so happy to entertain you. Yes, me and my wretched mistakes, it's all very dramatic.
Holmes's tone was acid.
But I looked them up, and the dates don't track. Your election was the summer before all that happened. So why did Lucian quit just before your scandal broke, when he would quite literally have been needed to fix your problem?
The two of them locked eyes. Morgan Vilk rested his hands on his belly.
After Moriarty quit and I lost my seat in Parliament so dramatically, I had some time on my hands. As you can imagine, I had developed a bit of a fixation with Lucian.
And?
He consults for a number of clients, you know. Spins things for them in the news. He hasn't worked for Downing Street in years. It's all been in the private sector. You spend your days telling lies for a living. It's toxic. It can kill your sense of right and wrong, and if you didn't have one to begin with. Do you want to know why he left my campaign?
Why?
I asked.
He was having an affair with my wife,
Morgan Vilk said. There wasn't a scrap of emotion in his voice.
And I had no idea. It had been going on for more than a decade. Lucian was, what, mid-twenties when he started working for me? Young, handsome. He has that ne'er-do-well charm, or did, anyway. That Moriarty name. There's an odd glamour to it. I suppose my wife was drawn to it.
He left my campaign because my daughter, Anna, was 13 years old, and the moment she hit puberty, she began to look just like him.
Anna. Anna Morgan Vilk. Anna with the missing $1,000.
No, I breathed. You have got to be... Was there a paternity test done?
Holmes demanded.
Of course, Morgan Vilk said. Lucian wore his hair longer in those days. Anna did it herself, plucked a few hairs off his coat and sent them in through a mail service. She showed him the results the week before the election.
And he rabbited, I said.
Yes,
Morgan Vilk said, that smile again, like Santa Claus.
Yes, he rabbited. I quite like that term. And when the news broke the next week about me and my mistress, well, my daughter despised me. She despised her mother, and she began worshipping the father she'd just discovered she had. She tried to live with him, you know, and he promptly sent her off to school.
Our school. She's working for him now, I said. Set me up pretty neatly earlier this week.
Oh, I thought he might do something like that. Nasty business.
Morgan Vilk's smile faded slightly.
I hate that my girl is mixed up in all of that. You two, well, like I said, the story about Charlotte and August and Lucian is the sort of nightmare fuel I've been running on, thinking about Anna. That man has it in for you, and he's using my daughter to do it.
I'm sorry, Milo said,
and to my surprise it sounded genuine. Maybe it was because the bottle was almost empty. He stood unsteadily to open the document box on the table.
I came here originally to discuss certain actions Mr. Morgan Vilk could perform to improve his public perception, both here and abroad.
Even drunk and disheveled, Milo Holmes had a certain sort of dignity that made you loath to talk back to him. But I couldn't let this one slide. Right. You being here had nothing to do with taking down Lucian, with helping your sister. She locked eyes with him. He shook his head almost imperceptibly.
Come now, Moriarty has his fingers in other pies. Yours isn't the only one.
Morgan Vilk indicated the files in the document box.
Let me put it bluntly. He's a brand-name criminal, and I'm in need of the recognition that would come from bringing him to justice. So I'd like to be the one to haul him in, if you don't mind. I'm working out the extradition details already.
Mind? I laughed bitterly.
I don't know about Holmes, but yes, please, for Christ's sake, drag him home in irons. That fucker just married my mother.
Did he? Milo murmured, the way you would ask about the weather.
That's a good reason to be wearing someone's blood down your shirt, Morgan Vilk said.
I actually don't know if I agree with that, but sure, fine. Look, he has some kind of plan. Who knows how deep this goes, and he's on his way to accomplishing it. Milo is hiding out, drunkenly giving you advice in a kitchen, and Holmes and I have our hands tied. I can't imagine what he's telling the police right now. The facts themselves are pretty damning.
Which are?
Holmes sighed. We beat him up, stripped him of his weapons, his wallet, and his fake passport, and then we escaped the police through the bathroom window.
Morgan Vilk whistled. Milo stuck his hand out. His passport, he said, and wallet.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, Holmes said again. Why would I help you? Where would that possibly get me?
Oh, I don't know, Lottie. Closer to putting away your tormentor.
You don't help. She was struggling with them, the words. In her filthy red dress, she looked like a girl who'd wandered away from an explosion. Milo, you don't know how to help. You take over instead. You make things worse. I knew what I was doing. I knew where Leander was. I was going to free him. I went to Berlin to lure Hadrian and Philippa back to our house. D.I. Green was going to arrest them. Lucian would never let his brother and sister take the fall for something he'd done. He has that much loyalty. In order to spring them, he would have had to make a move, come out into the open. It was a plan, a good one. And then you showed up with your sniper rifle? Didn't it have a scope? Didn't you stop to look before you fired? Did you...
Milo had his hands up in front of him. They were shaking. I was trying to protect you, he said quietly. I only ever wanted to protect you.
You had years to protect me, Holmes said, defeated. That was a piss-poor time to start.
They stared at each other.
Charlotte,
Morgan Vilk said into the silence.
Oh, for crying out loud, fine, she said. Fine. How about this? I'll give you copies of Lucian's forged passport and anything you find in his wallet. In exchange for the originals, I'll allow you to bring the bastard in when the time comes.
And that time is? Morgan Vilk asked.
Holmes glanced at me.
Watson?
She was asking my opinion.
We still have a few loose ends, I said, taken aback. How does tomorrow work for you?
While Holmes supervised the extensive photography Milo's assistant was performing on Lucian's things, I stepped aside to turn on my phone. It had been ringing so incessantly since we'd cut and run that I'd had to turn it off to save the battery. I had nearly 100 texts, almost all of which were from my stepmother, Abigail.
Jamie, what have you done? What were you possibly thinking?
And, Jamie, come home. It'll be okay, I promise. A blatant lie. And...
Your father keeps telling me to let the police handle this, but I just don't know what's going on. What were you thinking? How could you do something like this?
I was horrified for her, but when I began to type out a reply, I realized that she might not be the one in control of her phone. In fact, I'd bet that she wasn't. If not Lucian Moriarty, then the police. Nothing from my mum. Well, now that the adrenaline was beginning to leave my system, I had to come to terms with the possibility that there wouldn't be anything from my mother ever again. I just assaulted her new husband in a public restroom. I couldn't even wrap my head around it, what she must be feeling. Even if she found out that Lucian Moriarty had been behind it all this time, I'd beaten him so brutally that she had to think that I was a monster. How could she ever look at me again? I realized I was shaking, nauseous. I took a steadying breath. Think about it later, I told myself. You can't deal with this now. Texts from Elizabeth making sure I was okay. She hadn't heard back from me. Texts from Lena, incomprehensible, thick with unicorn emojis, celebrating some kind of win she thought was coming when we'd meet up tonight. And a single text from my father. I want you to know that I'm proud of you. Nothing else. For some reason, that scared me more than anything else I'd seen tonight. I was crashing, and hard, by the time that Holmes returned with the passport in her fist.
I'm going to have to sleep with this under my pillow, she muttered, as Morgan Vilk chattered on a phone in the background.
I showed Holmes my text messages from her and Elizabeth. What do you think? Should we meet up with Lena? See what she has on the boil?
I'd think so. My plan had been to leave the country tonight.
I stared at her. Tonight? She hurried on.
But I don't think it's safe for me to rejoin my uncle.
Wait, you were staying with Leander? For how long?
Or maybe it is safe, but why risk it? And then there's the matter of you being hunted by the police, and I... Well, I'd prefer to be here. But Lena said midnight.
That's still 4 hours until we're due back in at Sherringford. Jesus, it was only 8 o'clock. I was shocked a whole week hadn't passed since I left campus this afternoon.
Well,
Holmes wasn't quite meeting my eyes. In the background, Milo dumped out a file folder on the table, and papers scattered like a rush of leaves. We haven't had a chance to... I haven't told you about Shelby, I said, remembering in a horrible rush. How could I have forgotten? Lucian, stroke Ted, and our mad dash across town, and Milo appearing like the ghost of Hangover's past, all of it had pushed my sister to the back of my mind. She started her new school today, here in America, but I think it's another con of Lucian's. My mother's claiming that she's just homesick, but I trust my sister's judgment, and Holmes... Shell was scared when she called. Hiding in a closet scared. That isn't homesickness. Holmes's eyes refocused on me.
Where is it?
Somewhere close to Sherringford, I think. I don't know.
Get her out of there, she said immediately.
Now,
now, Jamie. How long has she been there?
Only a few hours, I said. Hopefully not long enough for anything terrible to happen to her.
There are a lot of terrible things, Holmes said, that can happen to a girl in a few hours.
Can we get a car? How do we get out of the city? Is there...
Do you require my assistance? Milo called.
No, Holmes and I said together, and she dragged me away from him and Morgan Vilk out into the darkened hallway. There she paced, dragging her hands through her hair.
No, no, we can't be everywhere. We can't try to be. We have resources. Yes, my uncle.
My dad, I said, pulling out my phone. I'll text him. Dad, I wrote, Shelby's in trouble. Her new school, I think it's a front for something. Holmes was watching my fingers.
Lucian consults for a school in Connecticut, a wilderness rehabilitation school. I've been to places like that, and they're awful, but generally safe. I don't know how true that will hold if Lucian is involved.
She's just a girl, I said, almost desperately.
I know, Holmes said. I wish that made a difference.
Get Leander and get her out of there, please, I wrote, and I powered down my phone, but even still I couldn't keep myself from staring at the screen, like some reassurance would appear there by magic.
Wash your hands of it for now, she said, watching me. Trust them. Your father, Leander, they've handled worse, and I know your sister. She's strong.
Okay, I said, because it was awful and it was true.
Okay, she said, and then,
Jamie,
can we talk?
Yeah, I said, of course, because we hadn't yet, not really. She fidgeted a little, flexing her hands.
There's a bedroom upstairs, she said finally, if you want some privacy.
Oh, the back of my neck went hot, then freezing cold.
Oh, okay. Not oh, she said, the rebuttal automatic, and then, I mean, not necessarily oh, not oh unless, damn it, Jamie, I'm trying very hard here, can we please just go upstairs?
There was more house here than I'd realized. The room we'd been given was at the end of a long corridor, the floorboards chalky and warped, the walls paneled too in dusty white. All the other rooms were shut up, unused, and there was a musty smell in the air. Like no one had opened a window all winter. Our bedroom had the same haunted feeling. The bed was piled high with white down and linen, and there were chairs and a dresser, but they were covered in dust sheets. I wanted to snap them off and shake them out, see if there was anything below them worth salvaging. I didn't, though. They were beautiful as they were. Holmes didn't care about that. Not that kind of beauty.
Someone might have bugged the room, she muttered, and immediately started dismantling it piece by piece, beginning with the bed.
Once she'd finished feeling up the mattress, I flopped myself down on it and watched her work. It was the first moment I'd had alone with her in over a year.
I found myself looking for signs of change, ones I could see. Her hair was the same length, give or take, dark and straight, down to her shoulders, her eyes still the same unfathomable gray. She was taking apart the dresser now, removing each drawer to examine them, and she moved with the furious intensity she always had when we were on a case. Like a missile, made of pylons and metal and rocket fuel, deadly and unstoppable, fired off to hit a tiny target thousands of miles away. That precise. That incredible. I stopped myself there. A year of beating my head against a wall, alone, cursing her, mourning August, awash in guilt and shame. An hour together in Manhattan, and I caught myself admiring her? Really? I felt myself begin to shut down. "What's wrong?" she asked, flicking the sheet off the last chair. It kicked up a storm's worth of dust. "Nothing," I said, coughing. "Do you need help?" "I'm almost done." She dug her hands underneath the cushion. "Wait, no. Hold on." Frowning, she examined the thing in her palms. "I think that's an actual bug. Maybe wash your hands and..." "Right." I saw, when she returned, that she'd also made some effort to wash out the bottom half of her dress. "I think it's unsalvageable," she said, standing awkwardly by the bed. "I feel badly. I took this from the house where I was staying." "Where were you staying?" I asked, because I didn't know what else to say. "Ah," she said, gathering back up the sheets and pillows in her arms. She dumped them unceremoniously on top of me. Do you remember Detective Inspector Green?" It was hard to forget her. She'd been the one to arrest Holmes for killing August Moriarty. "I do," I said neutrally. "We've known each other for so long. No, I mean, yes, she was the Jameson Emeralds, but I..." "Her sister..." "You're staying in her sister's place," I said, sitting up.
"Yes."
"By yourself?"
"I've been going it alone now for some time," she said, with an airiness that was obviously false. "But Leander's with me now. I didn't know if you knew that."
"I didn't, but it makes sense, since you showed up together tonight."
"Of course."
"I'm not stupid, Holmes," I said, and she recoiled. Why did I lob that one at her? Why was all this suddenly so hard? Could put down our worst nightmare in a restaurant bathroom and then escape across New York, bloody city in the dark, but I couldn't talk to her alone in a quiet room.
"I never thought you were stupid," she said. "Not ever, but you know."
I'd been trying so hard to stay in the moment, to meet her where we were now, but her defensiveness, "which you know," dragged it out of me. "I wasn't worth it," I said, trying to keep my voice even. "You decided that I wasn't worth telling the truth to. You couldn't even tell me where you were going. The police took you away, and you walked off without saying a word. You were gone. A year went by, Holmes. A year. For all I knew, you were dead."
"You're my friend," she said, crossing her arms. "My only friend. If I would have told anyone what I was doing, I would have told you. But I thought that you would trust me."
"You don't get to pull that one," I told her. "We chased Hadrian and Philippa across Europe because you lied to me. I should have trusted you after that. Leander was in your basement. You knew about it. You didn't tell me. I should have trusted you after that."
"Yes," she said automatically.
Then she winced.
"No, no, of course not. But can you blame me for not thinking clearly after what happened to
August?" I said. "Well, you were thinking clearly enough to give me orders." She gave me a despairing look.
"Not good ones."
"Clearly not." Holmes shifted her weight.
"Anything else?"
"Well..." I pulled my knees up to my chest. That's all."
"That's all?"
There's been so much I've wanted to tell you. I've made so many mistakes. I feel almost like you've ruined me.
Watson.
Or maybe I was like this all along. I didn't know why you put up with me for so long, and at first I thought, I'm not as smart as her, I'm just her sidekick. That you wanted me around because I admired you. I couldn't hide it, I felt it so much.
I just didn't know what you wanted from me, what you got from the two of us together. And then you left, and I think I got lost somewhere. I don't like myself anymore. I used to like myself, at least a little, and I've just been behaving like